chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Mike Weinberg on the show today. Mike is a sales truth teller, author of 3 Amazon number one bestsellers, a coach, a keynote speaker, and he's on a mission to simplify sales. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So Mike, oh my goodness, I am so beyond excited. Welcome to the Something Extra podcast.
Lisa, it is beyond a treat to be here. Thank you.
So you and I have known each other. I don't even know. We probably shouldn't say, because then that's going to kind of tell everybody how old we are, Mike. But we've known each other for a very long time. Well, let's just say our kids were all really small.
Really small. Yeah.
I'm excited about our conversation today. It's a very important topic. But, you know, before we get into that, I kind of want to talk a little bit about how you grew up, because I know that you did not grow up here. You're a New Yorker.
I like how you said that. It makes me want a slice of pizza just hearing New Yorker. I grew up in a home in the suburbs of New York City. My parents were both city kids when they grew up. Kind of the normal life of someone, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s. My parents got divorced and I went to school at a state university in New York. And I love New York and I'm fat because of New York pizza, to be completely honest with you. I was ready to leave. You know, as a young adult, I thought, I want something different, this chaos and the community aspect. I said, I think I need to try to live in the Midwest. And I got this great job opportunity. And I feel like it was just the Lord opened up a door for me to end up here in the Midwest. And weeks after I got here, I met my wife, who was from California. So we have this joke, East meets West, right here under the Gateway Arch. And we've been here for 30 years.
I love that. See, I did not know that about you and Katie. That is too funny.
It is. And now, you know, we have 3 kids, right? We can't answer the question because we're not from here. And for those around the country, if you know, St. Louis, the first time you meet somebody, they ask you where you went to school. And it's a really odd question because they're trying to put you in this little box, right? It's a unique St. Louis thing. But neither of us can answer the question, but our kids can. So we feel like this is home and we'll probably be here for a long time.
Well, you know, Greg and I are not from St. Louis either, Mike. You know, we grew up in a small Western town in Kentucky. And so it was baffling when people say, where did you go to school? And it's kind of a St. Louis thing. Everybody knows that. So I read something about you. I did not know this about you, but there's a certain car that you really like. You're kind of a Porsche fanatic, right?
I am a Porsche fanatic. Since I've been 10 years old, I saw a Porsche 911, the traditional Carrera, in a movie. And I just thought, that is the sexiest thing I've ever seen. And honestly, it was like my life mission. Back in college, my roommates and I would play the lottery to try to, and the deal was if you won, you got a Porsche and you had to buy one for your friend as well. And so that's been kind of a lifelong passion. And so I'm in the Porsche Club of America and I go driving with some really neat guys that just love their cars. And it's really more about the experience and the beauty and the camaraderie than it is even like the ego thing of owning, you know, such a nice piece of equipment. But it's just a fun passion and a hobby. And it's definitely, it helps with my mental health, getting out for some drives and getting away from email and the daily grind for sure.
Well, I am so excited about our conversation today. And like I said, I have known you for a very long time. And
I mean, you're an author, you are a keynote speaker, you're a coach, you're a consultant, you've done all kinds of things around sales. And I do know that you have spoken on 5 different continents. What I'd like to know is, which 2 have you not spoken on? And I would say probably one's Antarctica.
You are correct. Right?
Surely you have not spoken on Antarctica.
I have a handful of global clients, and they are really wonderful, generous people. And I got an opportunity a couple different times to do a couple around the globe trips where I spoke for them in numerous places. The other of the 7 is Australia. So I managed on the way to Singapore a couple times, flew right by it and kept on going to Singapore, which is really far away. But I love traveling. I can't get enough of Europe. Part of the discouragement about this last couple of years with COVID, right, was all of us being locked down in different ways and being prevented from traveling, particularly overseas. I spoke with somebody in India this morning. We're trying to put an event together, and really it's hard with dates. But I learned early on in my business career when I started going to Canada, I'm an arrogant American that was brought up to think that we're the center of the world. And the moment you get off of U.S. soil, you learn the world doesn't see the same way we see everything. And you get this different global perspective. I can't get enough, whether I'm in Buenos Aires or everywhere I go, I'm learning from people, from culture. And the thing that's been most surprising to me on the sales management and culture and sales leadership pieces, the challenges that companies and executives face around the globe are identical. The sales issues change because of cultures and mores, but the management challenges of talent, accountability, coaching, finding the right people, dealing with underperformers, exactly the same, whether I'm in Singapore or Spain or South Africa or South America or here in St. Louis. So it's been fun to have that global sales leadership community to connect with.
That is such a good point. We've done a little bit of traveling, and we've been to some developing countries like El Salvador and, you know, places like that. And it's human. You know, they love their children as much as we do. I mean, you know, they want the best for their children. They want them to be educated, you know. So yeah, people in those challenges are more alike than sometimes we would like to think. But I do think you need to put Australia on your bucket list.
Oh, it's on the list. I'm just waiting.
Because I've heard awesome things. You're just waiting for the right client.
Yeah. And my wife's made it really clear, because our nest is now empty, that she would like to tag along on some of the right trips.
Just like having the right targets, right? She's got her right targets too.
I sense some sales framework coming at us here, Lisa. All right.
Speaking of Katie, I read something. I don't know where I read it, maybe in one of your books, but you said, Katie is the best proof that you really can sell. And I thought that was really funny.
Oh, and yeah. And it's not just because she's beautiful and I look disgusting. It's because if you spend 3 minutes with her, anyone who does, no one thinks that she got a better deal in this marriage. Everyone knows I had to sell my butt off to make this one work. So I am blessed.
You're so sweet. Well, you know, Mike has been voted as the number one sales expert to follow on Twitter. That was by Forbes, named him a top sales influencer. It's just crazy. But I want to get into our meat and potatoes here. You know, I read there is a study that came out in October of 2021 by Deloitte. They basically had surveyed CEOs from all walks and key takeaways. So what's on the top of mind for CEOs? Over 50% of them saw or thought that the effects of the pandemic would be finished by the end of 2021. 2/3 of them are thinking about growth. How do we grow? How do we grow new markets? How do we grow new accounts? How do we continue to grow and stay relevant, right? And that's where we're going to really get into. This is a big one for us. We see this all the time. Talent is the top priority, and especially tech talent. 3/4 of the CEOs say they are expecting a labor and skill shortage to really affect their business. And then climate was number 4. So those are the things that are top of mind for CEOs. So the one I want to dig into, and the one that you are an expert and Forbes says you're the one to watch, is on the growth, because sales is so important. Without sales, none of us are relevant.
Preach, sister. Yeah.
I know. It's so true. And I think why you and I connect so much is because, you know, I sold for a Fortune 500 company, Mike, before we founded Technology Partners. And I love sales. And one of the things that you say, you know, you're on a mission to simplify sales and also debunk the myth that the old ways don't work anymore. And boy, do I see that. And yes, things have changed. My goodness, I sold 30 years ago. But what you talk about in your books is, gosh, those old methods still work. So this is what I really want to get into.
There's this interesting dynamic because everybody today has FOMO, right? They have this fear that there's some new toy or tool or trick or process. And, you know, there's thousands of sales tool vendors and trainers trying to make executives feel like if you really want to grow, you need this new trick, you need this new process, you need my platform, you need this plugin. And sure, tools and enablement, those things are really important. But in my industry, if I'm going to be really blunt, there are a lot of charlatans that are out there online, on LinkedIn with big followings preaching nouveau nonsense that everything in sales has changed and nothing that used to work still works. Well, you know what? You said it. A lot has changed. And the internet has changed the dynamic of information flow, right? And who has the leverage, particularly early on in a sales cycle. But the reality is, Lisa, the top producing sellers, like today in 2022, they're executing at a high level because they have mastered the same fundamentals that you and I were playing with 25 years ago. And while 20% of selling has changed because of information flow and exposure and what the internet has created, and even some tools and social media, 80% is still the basics. And part of the reason that New Sales Simplified, and I appreciate your inflated view of me and that book, and it's been around 8 or 9 years at this point. And the reason that it's had legs is just because A, it's simple and the world's hungry for simple, practical truth. And B, because it's helping people master the very basics that are still driving sales results and driving growth today. I mean, there's a very simple framework that says, if we're going to grow from a sales perspective, we need to select the targets. You said that earlier, right? We need to be strategic and decide whose business do we want and are we committed to proactively pursuing? If you want to grow, if it's salespeople are going to do it, they got to go create opportunities. They got to know who they're targeting.
Yes.
The second piece of the framework says we better arm those salespeople with some weapons so they can be effective at telling the story, articulating value, securing meetings and being consultants and conducting consultative sales calls where they actually learn more than they talk. And then they need to be able to present with power and propose, but getting those meetings is critical. And the last piece of the framework is planning and executing, right? It's the simple stuff, owning your calendar, time blocking, holding yourself accountable for high value activity. And what kills me today is with all this talk of tech and enablement and all the techniques everybody wants to talk about, the thing that I see driving growth more than anything else, I had this conversation with a few CEOs yesterday, is when the salespeople are really laser focused on the target accounts, whether they're growable existing clients or ideal prospects that they're going to pursue. And they spend more of their time selling, actually trying to create new opportunities instead of babysitting programs or running around playing glorified customer service person. So I threw a lot in there that we could probably unpack.
Yes.
Where I'm seeing the biggest lift, the most growth, the enormous sales success is when sellers are really focused on what their day job is, trying to create new opportunities, and management has the right people on the job, and they're holding them accountable for doing that primary job.
Yeah, so much good stuff there. I want to repeat this because you call this the new sales driver. The three things for our listeners, as you're taking notes, select your targets. We're going to do a deep dive there. Mike has a lot to say about that. Create and deploy your weapons. One thing that you said that I just laughed at, Mike, you said, don't bring a water gun to a gunfight.
That's right.
Because you're not going to do very well, right? You got to have the right weapons, and there's tons out there. So we'll do a deeper dive into that and your favorites, and then plan and execute the attack. But those three components, the first two of those are completely meaningless unless you take action. And that is the execution piece, and just so important. So there's so much here, so much more I want to unpack, but we do need to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Mike Weinberg.
Are you an IT executive with years of experience? Are you energized when you empower others? If I've piqued your interest thus far, you may be a great mentor for the TechLX program in St. Louis. TechLX prepares rising IT leaders to tackle today's challenges and prepare for tomorrow's demanding roles by pairing them with senior IT executives like yourself. Mentors receive coaching from technology partners and will be invited to all TechLX networking events featuring outstanding speakers of the IT industry. To apply, visit tpi.co/TLX.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Mike Weinberg. I am so thrilled about this conversation. We've got so much more to talk about. We're going to try to get it in this last 15 minutes. But Mike, we've already mentioned targeting a lot. And I know this is so strategic. And this is a mistake that a lot of salespeople make, is they're just doing the shotgun type approach and they're wasting valuable time on targets that will never materialize. So I would love to get your thoughts. I mean, you've got all kinds of questions that you say we need to be stepping back and asking ourselves these questions. But tell us what you think about building target lists. How big should the list be? Should they have some dream clients on there? How do they even figure out who they need to be targeting?
I love that you're asking this, Lisa, because most people take this for granted or overlook it. And what I always say is selecting your targets and creating that list, it's first for a reason. It's one of the very few chances when we're selling where we get to engage our brains at a high level. Most of what we do when we're selling is not strategic. It's about influence and persuasion and execution and discipline and follow-up, right? And EQ. The time we get to use our IQ is when we're being strategic. Whose business do we want? What's the strategic path of least resistance and most likely success? And I resonate 100% with what you just said a second ago. The sales hunters that have the biggest success are the ones who laser focus in a narrow area. It's like a sniper. It's not shotgun. They're not going after everybody. So they ask themselves some really hard questions about who are their best clients and what size are they and who are the people in those companies they should be targeting and what are the characteristics, what are the hallmarks of your ideal profile customer? And you study, you know, your top 20 accounts and you kind of create that ideal client profile. Some people call it an avatar, and that's who you want to go pursue on the new business side. But along with deciding who you're going to target for net new business, most of us, there's a lot of opportunity to grow the business by doing a better job penetrating, cross-selling, upselling into our existing accounts. And unfortunately, what I see is that a whole lot of salespeople default to serving their friends. And in fact, I'll say it in a nasty way. They kind of babysit their favorite customers, even though those customers might not be growable. You already have the lion's share of their business. So what I advocate is let's call a targeting timeout. Let's get really strategic. Let's make a list of ideal profile prospects that look, smell, and feel like people who do business with us. But then let's also segment. That's the key word, segment our existing customers. And let's identify those that are most growable or most at risk. Those are the ones that are worth our time and attention. What I'll tell you is too many salespeople overserve their best customers in the name of protecting the relationship. But the opportunity cost is they never get to go see the growable customer or the prospect. You tracking with me there? It's a matter of time commitment.
Yes.
So we need to reallocate strategically to spend time on people who could either buy more or who don't buy from us at all.
That's so good. And you talk about, you know, time management is not a thing of the past. Calendaring is not a thing of the past. You know, one of the things that you talk about a lot, Mike, is prospecting. And you said sometimes salespeople will do everything.
Even sign up to clean the bathroom, right? They'll volunteer for anything aside from prospecting.
Exactly. Because it's hard. It is hard. But, you know, how much time should be spent on account penetration versus prospecting, working referral sources? I mean, these are all things that salespeople are doing. And how much time should you allocate to each of these things?
Yeah, it's a very hard question to answer generically, but I love that you want to talk about the calendar because this is the truth. And I can't believe I'm actually going to admit this publicly, but the number one reason that salespeople don't bring in more new sales, and remember my filter, right? How do we win more new sales? That's why that's the title of the book. The number one reason they're not picking up new sales is because they're not working on new sales. They're not trying to create advance and close sales opportunities. They're just working, they're servicing. So the calendar is everything. And the thing we need to do is time block our proactive selling time, where we go in our calendar and we take an hour or 90 minutes and we do nothing but proactive outbound outreach, whether we're asking for referrals or we're searching for meetings or we're following up on old deals. That's proactive selling effort. That's absolutely critical. And to specifically answer your question about, well, what percent of our time prospecting? Here's a very simple formula that I advocate. If you follow this, at least generically, it guarantees you deal flow and consistency in your pipeline. Because most salespeople default to service work. And then with the limited discretionary selling time they have left, They try to work their hottest deals to get them over the finish line. And I get that. You get that as a seller. You want to close what's hot.
Right.
But what happens is when you spend most of your time doing service work and then your prime selling time gets devoted to trying to close what's hot, what's the part of the funnel, the pipeline that never gets worked? The top, right? We never give the right amount of time dedicating to creating new opportunities at the top of the pipeline. So my simple formula is, if you're a salesperson, why don't you divide your selling time into thirds? And I'll give you a third to try to close your hot deals. I'll give you another third to work existing relationships and people you're already talking to, because that's kind of fun and energizing. But what would happen if you carved out a full third of your selling week to create? And those are my three favorite verbs: create, advance, and close. But if you carved out a full third of your calendar just for opportunity creation to put new stuff in the pipeline, you guarantee yourself consistent deal flow, consistent income. It's a beautiful thing, but it takes discipline of dividing your calendar up and forcing yourself to work those new opportunities.
I love that. Create, advance, and close. I love that, Mike. Well, your chapter 2 of New Sales Simplified is the not so sweet 16 reasons that salespeople fail. And I don't want to go through all of these, but a few of these I do want to go through. You know, one of the things you said is salespeople fail because they really haven't had to find new business. They don't know how. And that brings me to another topic I want to talk about. You said that sometimes they don't know how because nobody's shown them. And in your book, you go, when you're finally parked the car, the true sales manager would turn into Yoda, preparing young Luke Skywalker for the sales bell. Tell me about the last conversation that you had with this account. Who are we meeting with? Describe each person's behavioral style. What's important to each person attending this call? Why do they think we're here today? What's going on in their business that I need to know about? What's the main objective of this sales call? What does a win for us look like walking out of here? I mean, you've got tons of questions. And then the debrief. And, you know, these are questions like, well, how do you think you handled yourself today? What would you do differently next time? Did you catch the reaction in that painful flinch when you asked that third probing question? And you said, here's the problem. We don't have those true blue sales mentors anymore.
Oh, it's awful. Lisa, we could talk for 2 hours about what you just started. Where did all the sales mentors go? When you and I were young pups in sales, our managers took pride in taking us under their wing and developing us. And sometimes they were encouraging our hearts, and sometimes they were kicking us in the ass. But they were in our cars, they were in our airplanes, they were prepping us for meetings, they were watching us in meetings, they were debriefing, we were strategizing. It was a primary function. Here's my answer. So many sales managers are buried in crap or overwhelmed, or the executive oversales has so much else on their plate and they stick their head in a CRM screen where they think they can manage by sending emails in the middle of the night, right? And it was before we all had smartphones and there was a different focus on developing people. Today, I don't see managers developing their people like that. And while it's great for my sales training business, it's not great for the sales community. I would much rather see the sales manager's mentor, because the consequence is ugly. We have amateur sellers who can't tell the story, who can't run a sales call, who don't have the gravitas to sit in front of a senior executive. They don't have the acumen or the weightiness, and no one showed them how to do it. And they're not going to learn it by osmosis. So it's terrible. The consequences of amateur salespeople that get commoditized and don't come across like we want them to as consultants and value creators, a lot of that I lay at the feet of lack of mentoring. So I love that you brought that up. I mean, it's a huge topic.
We always say at Technology Partners, hope is not a strategy. The manager can't just hope the people that are reporting to them are going to know what to do, right? So there's several other ones, you know, and we've already talked about a few of these. Connecting with the buyer, don't make it all about you. It's not about you. It's really about them.
I want to go back to something you brought up a minute or two ago, because it's really an issue, particularly in the tech space, where we have salespeople that do not know how to hunt because they've hopped from hot industry to hot company. So they're always in a position where there are so many leads and so much demand, they end up being the demand fulfillment team instead of the demand creation team. And it just happens, you know, they're not in a position where someone's forced them to go create opportunities. They get good at chasing, they get good at fulfilling.
Right.
But that's where mentoring comes in. It's where the target list comes in. It's where all those weapons, right? Prospecting and ability to secure an early stage meeting. Be very wary about hiring the industry veteran because they had a big job somewhere else. What they may be bringing with them is a Rolodex, to use an old phrase, but they may not be hungry and they may not really know how to hunt. Their big numbers in their past may be because they had the largest patch or they got handed the best accounts or the best leads, but it wasn't because they went and drove that business on their own. So be very careful when you're interviewing and looking to grow your team that you're not just bringing in someone with a reputation, but you're bringing in a hungry sales athlete that knows how to do the job and is still hungry to go make it happen. That's huge.
That is so huge. That I'm so glad that you brought up that point because it's true. I was looking here. One of the things that you say, top performers in sales don't wait for anything or anyone. They act. And in fact, they are proactively attacking. So because sometimes you hear the excuses, you know, well, marketing needs to give us more leads or we don't have the right, you know, leave behinds or the right capability statements. Marketing needs to provide this. And I love that because you go, top performers in sales, they don't wait for anything or anyone. They get out there and they do it.
Absolutely. Yes. The most important word in sales is proactive.
Yes.
You're creating, you're making it happen. You're not sitting on your butt waiting for a lead, waiting for the inbound marketing engine, waiting for one of your customers that has a problem. You're out there making things happen. That's why there's the opportunity to have so much more fun and financial reward. The financial reward is for people who drive business. It's not for babysitters of territories or customer lists or people who can just respond. You have to be able to create. That's why they let you make more money because you're actually creating business.
Yes. I want to drive this point home one more time because I love that word create. You know, so I'm going to remember that. I'm going to put that in my own repertoire, the create, the advance, the close, because I think create, what that requires is for you to set aside time for some brain power and just to be thinking, looking at the journal. I know you're a business journal fanatic. So am I. I'm like, if you are in business, you need to be reading the business journal. It's not just for sales. I mean, people need to be reading the business journal. You need to be reading. You need to be scheduling that think time to even process this, to know how you want to create and what you want to create, right, Mike? So I think that may be a step that's skipped a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that point. It's trendy today to talk about the need for business acumen for salespeople. But honestly, if you're going to bring value and have a conversation with a client, particularly a senior level person, you have to understand their business and the environment in which they're operating. And if you're not reading, whether it's the Wall Street Journal or the Business Journal or some business news and checking in on podcasts and paying attention, you're going to look like a fool. And no one's going to take your advice as a professional salesperson if you don't have insight and understanding. I applaud, Lisa, what you're saying, because too many people are too busy, too addicted to their phones. And when they have free time, they're thumb scrolling through Instagram and laughing at reels and fun stuff when what they should be doing is spending 15 minutes in the business paper, because that's going to pay them a lot bigger dividends in their career.
Agreed. Yeah. And that all goes back to discipline and focus. Managing your calendar, managing your time. Oh my goodness, there's so much more here. But I will just say, sales is fun. It's connecting with people. It's helping solve challenges, Mike. It's a great profession. Take it seriously. Be reading. Mike's got great books here. There's other sales books. So always be growing. Have that growth mindset. So Mike, I have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah, I love it. I've been thinking about this question for the last week or so, particularly after listening to an episode you did with Bill Ellis that I really enjoyed. It helped solidify my thinking of how to articulate what I wanted to say. The something extra that every leader needs is an absolute dedication to their passion and their why. That's what drives them. It's what gives them confidence. It's what helps them fight through the tough days and the emotional ups and downs and the difficult news and their circumstances. In business, my why is helping salespeople and sales teams win more new sales. And my absolute resolute commitment to that is what drives everything I do. And sometimes it means I have to go have a hard conversation with a senior executive and say, I'm going to hold up a mirror for you because you hired me to train your salespeople and help them do better. I need you to look in this mirror because you're creating a culture and you're doing some things here that are stopping them from getting new sales. And because I'm so committed to my own why, that I need to be willing to have that conversation with even maybe the person that engaged me or have to tell a salesperson the truth at times that they may not want to hear. But that commitment is what creates confidence and clarity and helps you move the needle. And it also creates followership because people see how committed you are to accomplishing this outcome, to achieving your why and your passion, and they get on board with you. That's what I'd say is the something extra that we definitely all need as leaders.
I love it. I could not agree with you more. Well, Mike, what's coming up for you, or, you know, whatever you want to talk about, and how our listeners can find you, how they can get involved.
All right. You're so super kind, and you energize me, Lisa. I could talk to you for days. So thanks for the platform and the chance just to talk about some really cool sales basics with you. People can find me online at mikeweinberg.com. And from there, you can launch to anywhere, including my podcast. On social channels, it's Mike_Weinberg, W-E-I-N-B-E-R-G. Got some fun stuff in the works right now. I'm not working on a book or anything like that. I'm looking at continuing to bring maximum value to my clients. And, you know, here we are as we cycle through COVID. There's a lot of things that are fluid in my world where meetings are regularly converting from in-person to virtual. And now they're going back to in-person again as we deal with all the chaos and the waves of variants. So I'm in touch with a lot of sales leaders. But the thing we reinstituted last summer and fall, which we're going to be doing again this year, are these Supercharge Your Sales Leadership events. These are elite one-day intensives for executives or frontline sales managers focused on supercharging them to radically increase sales management effectiveness. Because the reality is when the sales leader is right and healthy and focused on their high payoff activities, that's what you can transform culture and sales results. The leader, it's not the salespeople. The leader is the key to creating the culture and driving long-term results. So we're putting out more and more resources to uplift and support and challenge and equip the sales leader, whether that's the senior exec or the frontline manager. So we've got some events we do for that and some other content. And that's where we're putting a lot of our energy right now.
Right. And so our listeners would find that just on your website.
Yeah, mikeweinberg.com/events. They could learn more about those. We always do these at premium venues. Like, we're not going to be in the basement ballroom at the Hilton at O'Hare. Like, we're at the Porsche Experience Center in Atlanta, or we're at a Four Seasons on a golf course, because the leader needs to get away and like get energized with peers and be in an environment that's conducive to creating energy. So they're always fun premium venues.
Very good. Well, hey, Mike, seriously, we just scratched the tip of the iceberg here. So please go get Mike's books, listen to his podcast. I promise you it is going to help you. And, you know, remember, go back to what I said about the top of mind for CEOs. Growth is number two. So this is where we can do that. Mike, thanks so much. It's good to see you, my friend.
What a treat. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.